probably will come across some of your studies about how to teach Tanakh or different methodologies that you might teach in grade school or high school. Shmuel tends to be taught in grade school. Shmuel Rav now goes to yeshiva systems in sixth grade. Shmuel Bet in seventh grade. Different schools choose different things for eighth grade. Some do malachim. If you can remember what you did, it's not so long ago, probably. Some schools do. I teach eighth grade in day school, and they do Chamesh Megillot and Yoda. So it's, you know, it's accessible. There's Rosh, there's Esther, you know, we did Kohelas. So, and Yom is always good to do in the beginning of the year, you know, Shana Yom Kippur time. So there are typically in Tanakh certain stories that authors use to teach methodology. Okay? I'll give you a few examples. There's a sefer called Ha'atzuv Ha'amunuti B'Sipur HaMikra. It's written by a man named Shimon Bar Efrat. Ha'atzuv Ha'amunuti B'Sipur HaMikra. He teaches, and some of us study a biblical narrative together, remember? Okay? So, he uses Shmuel Bet Perek Yud Gimel for his springboard of how to teach biblical narrative. That's the story of Tamar and Amnon. Not a very pleasant story to use to teach, but okay, some good stuff there. It's going to come up for us a little bit because it's in Shmuel Bet. Right? Almost everybody uses Mechirat Yosef. Right? It's a nice, neat package. It's bundled up at the end. Right? All loose ends somehow. Don't get cleared up. Right? They accuse him of being a spy, he accuses them of being a spy. You know, things come around. Because that's life. You know what we call this type of literature in the scholarly world? We call it sapiential literature. Sapiential literature, which is the ancient stories that teach you two words, that's life. You can expect that to happen sometime or another. Because that, you know, after all, we're just people. No, you don't expect a brother to violate a sister. You don't expect that. Well, hello, that's the end of Shmuel Bet. Everything at the end of Shmuel Bet is not to be expected. The punishments. Right? Don't mess around with the apple cart. Everything comes around, even to kings. Because while in other nations, the king gets away with what David did, but in Israel, there's a prophet who, by the way, is not afraid to accuse the king. In other nations, you can't get to that. He did. Point the finger at him, he grabs your finger, breaks it, and then breaks the rest of you. Ta'ish, really? So this same Shaul who got rid of all necromancy in Israel, right? So he falls by it. You know, the Radak says something very interesting about Paragon. It's not on our curriculum, but Shaul kills himself, right? There aren't too many suicides in Tanakh. I guess Shimshon is a suicide, right? He says, Tamos Nafshi and Plishtim, and that's it. Right? Do we know that he died? But yeah, it says he killed more people in his death than in all of his battles in life. So his death, he died. Right? When it all fell on him, I guess that killed him too. So, who else commits suicide in Tanakh? There's two more. Now, it's true that Yirmiyahu says, V'nivchar moves michayim per ches. That's not a heter for suicide. Nebuchadnezzar, I speak to some old ladies, mostly old ladies, because women always outlive men, but 97-year-old woman who just racked in pain, Holocaust survivor. She remembers Auschwitz like it was yesterday. And she just says, I would love to just fall asleep and not wake up. But, you know, she's in a lot of pain. She still swims. Because she lives in a building with a swimming pool and she swims every day. And she just says, I just do it so that I can, It doesn't mean that it's a blanket heter to commit suicide, chas v'shalom. It just means that at some point, you may run out of steam and you just say, I wish that it would just end peacefully. But who are the other two? Come on. One's in Sefer Shmuel. Hello. Remember, I'm giving you an example with 100 questions on the Pshat of Sefer Shmuel.
His son?
I couldn't call that a suicide. It's in that story, though. Someone convinces Avshalom to take the rebellion against his father, which starts off a rebellion against a brother. At the very end of David's reign, and just Avshalom wants to be sure that I decide who the next king is, not him. But then it turns against his father. Right? And he's advised to do so by a man named Achitophel, who advises Avshalom to kill his father, if that's what you want to do to become king. Avshalom does not take that advice. The next day he kills himself. What a sore loser. No, because he knew that if he doesn't take my advice, he's not going to win. And if he doesn't win, it means David is going to come back to Yerushalayim. And if David comes back to Yerushalayim, he will kill me. And when you die at the hands of a king for Mar of the Malchus, you don't get to give anything to your children. I'd rather die before he gets a chance to do that. It was the right thing to do. Just like he always does. Achitophel, I mean, the right thing. If I asked you, what's the best way for me to rob a bank? What would be your best advice for me?
Don't rob.
Great. But that's not what I'm asking you. I want the best advice to rob a bank. So give me the good advice. Okay. Now, the best advice is don't rob a bank. Achitophel, it says in the Tanakh, always gave the advice the person was asking for, as if though you were asking the Urim V'Tumim. So, if you know, just taking it from a very dry mathematical standpoint, and he felt, yeah, I should commit suicide. But suicide is forbidden. It doesn't matter. That makes more sense. Rebellion against the king is also not forbidden. No. Okay, we have three so far. Shimshon, Shaul, Achitophel. There's actually another one. Shaul's armor bearer was with him as the Plishtim advanced. And Shaul said, they have found our position. Let's kill ourselves because we don't want to be taken alive. Please kill me. He didn't say let's kill ourselves. Please kill me. Plishtim were terrible ancient conquerors who did not want to be conquered alive by a Philistine. Think of what they did to Shimshon in their arena. That's what they did. If they ever captured, like certainly like important people, the king, oh my goodness, they would rip him apart piece by piece over a period of a year in their public arenas, hang him by his toes naked in front of the whole arena. And I mean, they would do crazy things to him. Look what they did to his body after they found it. Right? Him and his three sons, they stripped them and beheaded them and then nailed them to the wall, four of them. Right? So Shaul, it's bad enough to be captured dead by the Plishtim, you don't want to be captured alive. So he tells his armor bearer, kill me. The armor bearer refuses, I can't kill my king. Shaul falls on his own sword, you know the story. And the armor bearer sees him fall on the sword, so he kills himself. Okay, so I guess that's another one. All right, the last one is a king who rebels in Sefer Melachim. His name is Zimri. He rebels against Omri. Omri's son Ahab, who's king of Israel. He did not succeed. It says he went into his house and burnt it down and died in the house. So he's also a suicide. Why am I telling you all this? Because Chazal looked very, very down upon suicide. It was popular amongst Sufist circles to try to get to the next world and, you know, kill yourself in good sound mind. There's a great debate in Rishonim literature over whether Shaul is a justified suicide or not. This debate had very, very important halacha l'maisa ramifications. Jews were committing suicide. I mean, you know the Masada story? Right? The whole stronghold. There was even a larger group than that at a place called Gamla. Thousands more people committed suicide. The Romans found everybody dead. Were you taught about the Masada story? You're not hearing it now for the first time?
Like at Masada.
That Masada Jews chose to commit suicide. Right? How do we know the story? They say Josephus survived. He didn't kill himself. He learned about the story. It's in Josephus. They made movies about it. Were you taught about it? It became very much after the Six-Day War. They started taking tours to show what they did, where the wind was blowing, where the fire was. Right? So I'm about to ask you a question. Were you taught that they acted heroically in doing this, or that they were cowardly and wrong in doing this?
Generally, it's one of those where they did the right thing for them at the time. If you were in that situation, you'd probably hope that that was the demise.
Okay, in fact, it's usually taught quite heroically. This was very, you know, after the Six-Day War, when we started to control these areas for the first time in 2,000 years, it was seen as army used to graduate cadets there, you know, they just adopted a place where they committed suicide in order to show that we have our independence now, you know, we have this place to ourselves. Not so fast. Not so fast, say the Baal Yad Tosfos. That's what Baal Yad Tosfos, more than one of the Rambam. Not so fast, because in the Middle Ages, Jews were faced with this kind of thing often. Right? So how do you know whether it's a justifiable suicide or not? So here's where we stand. We only have one source. It's not even a Gemara. It's a Medrash, gracious rabbi, that says, Hachonek et atzmo ein mochelek la'olam haba. If you choke yourself, you commit suicide. I'm a beta small das in the case. Mishnah Pergamos. Right. So then the gracious rabbi asks, Yachol kishaul? Is Shaul also considered someone who is chonek at that small, meaning that he is a prohibited suicide? Talmud Lomar, ach. But does it say that? Because it says in Bereishis, Ach estimchem edrosh mikem. It's a shofeich, dom adam ba'adam, damo yishofeich. Ach estimchem edrosh mikem, which is taken to mean, I will hold you responsible even for your own blood. That you can't take someone else's blood, which Shabbos, most ancient cultures had such a thing. But I'm holding you responsible, this is a new thing now, for your own blood. Your own blood isn't yours. Okay? So the Gemara says, Yachol kishaul, Talmud Lomar, ach. Now what does that mean? Would you believe that we have exact opposite interpretations of what this means in some of the Mishnah? From what you know, the word ach is a delimitor. Es and gan add things to what's being spoken. Ach and Rach delimit. In other words, it's less than what you would think. Right? So it says, the simple pshat of how Ach is usually used. Can anyone draw the conclusion for me? And you'll see why I'm connecting all this to the Baal Hado.
But or accept.
Right, accept. In other words, you may not take your own blood, except if you are facing a situation like Shaul. In which case, it's allowed, and that's how almost all of Rishonim understand this. Except Visadi Gom, he's a Gom. And the Das came to me by the Antosis. You familiar with that parish? It's in the first of those. It does. It's a Canaan in Balei HaTosfos. The Balei HaTosfos have a lot of commentaries to the Torah. A lot of them have the word Zakenim in it. Okay, Hadar Zakenim. Das Kenim, if it was codified in the first Gedolos. Okay. They understand it to mean that Shaul was wrong in committing suicide. Why? Because afilu cherev chada munacha tzaracha al yimna atzmacha min arachanu. Even if the sword is at your throat, don't give up hope. I can tell you stories here that will make your hair stand up about how my father thought that it's curtains in 2 seconds and somehow something just happened in the war. Say. Something just, I mean, it's already, do you see what you say, Shema Yisrael? And so I'm going to expect 5 seconds to live, and then something crazy, unexpected. Right? So Shaul, how dare you? Maybe the Plishtim will be turned away. The Das Kanim, after writing this, quoting Sajagon, agreeing with it, tells a chilling story. This is in the page of the Mikros Nogolos, gracious. Right? I have a phone. The single volume of the Mikros Nogolos doesn't have the Das Kanim in it, otherwise we'd have it here. Right. But in the regular Mikros Gedolos, there's a Das Kanim, it's gracious test, plus okay. And he writes that there was one of the Crusades started to approach a castle where the Jews were hiding. And there were 400 children in the castle. And they saw the Crusades coming by the thousands. And there was one rabbi who started killing the children, telling them, you're dying with Kiddush Hashem, you're going to be all sealed in Gan Eden in a short while. And he killed all 400 of them, and then somehow they passed the castle and never stopped there. And he writes that all 400 of those kids were killed. He said, you cannot give up hope. I understand if someone is dying in terrible pain. Okay, we have something called morphine today, right? But at that time, it wasn't pain. It was taking these children for slavery or to be raised as Christians. They might have killed them also. They might have died a violent death. But this is not a violent death. It was like a masala death. You get it? I'm not so sure that if they did it, masala or gamlo is halachically sanctioned. I'm not going to judge them. History is judging them already, and we'll see the word about them. But here's the kicker. In the Balei HaTosfos story, okay, we're reading it last time, there's some wrinkle in the story that at least the Radak points to that says that the Das Kanim read Shaul wrong. Let's find it. Okay? As soon as you see it, tell me. Okay. Last time we concentrated a little bit on the Divrei Hayamim aspect of did he ask God or not? Okay. First, before we go into the text, because we're going to start with Pasuk Yud Aleph. Okay? Perek Chaf Ches, Pasuk Yud Aleph. Everybody have a text? Everybody have a text? As you know, this story of necromancy is not here. because it says in the text, Shaul got rid of all the Balat Ov. You know from the story that a Balat Ov is forbidden by the Torah. Okay? What gets you in this book is profoundly polemical by nature. This book was meant to respond to the Bible critics who say that the Shmuel Bet doesn't tell us that David did wrong by remarrying a wife he was once married to, subsequently married to someone else, because he doesn't, the author of Shmuel doesn't know that mitzvah in Dvar and Perkot Dal. So that does get in my book, and how Chazal respond to that. But something where the text says necromancy was wrong, there have been people violating the Torah since the Torah has been given. I just want to make sure that my Tanakh is aware that it's wrong. And if it doesn't appear to be aware, I want to know why. Okay, you know this, by the way. And you all still have your view. All right, well, this is here, this first few pages. This is a curriculum I wrote for Shmuel Bet 35 years ago. So it looks like, and I tried to get the like the Tzuras Adaf and the Kahati. I wanted to introduce them like I did with you. That, you know, the difference. This is curriculum for sixth grade. The introduction tells you what's 3A, 3B, 4B, 4, you know, 6, 5. So, Three A is just what the understanding the storyline as you have it here. 3B is tangential. Okay. 3B is tangential to help you understand our story. 4 is to help you understand other concepts that this story raises, even beyond. The understanding of which is not necessary, bless you, to learn Sefer Shmuel. Okay? For instance, you see 4B definition of the Ovidoni. What is an Ovidoni? Okay, it's an necromancer. Why are there two different words for it, etc. So for that, I just want to show you at the end. You see the last two pages of this? It's Kuf Pei Dalid, Kuf Pei Hei, Kuf Pei Ho. You see those two pages? This is a book I have expressed to you before. It's called Torah Shlema. Do you find yourself using it often? Okay. Torah Shlema's author is Menachem Kasher. Started Bereishis but did not finish. He lived over 100. He finished towards the end of Bamidbar. Didn't quite finish Bamidbar. After he died, Melech, his son died right after him. His son started to continue. It's never been finished. I don't know why. It's been about 30 years now. The amazing work on the first four Sfarim of the Torah does not extend to Dvarim. This is what it is, Chevra. It's aptly named Torah Shlema. Everything you need to know is there on the page. It's, of course, he has thoughts of Rashi. Now, he doesn't give you 7 or 8 different Mephoshim or Keshbam. That's in the Kroz Gadol. What he does is the Torah Shabbat Pepot. Okay, he tells you practically every Medrash spelled out that's important in order to understand this. It's Gemara, Medrash. The really important thing are the notes at the bottom. Now, the notes here are parse. Because he already dealt with Ovidoni back in Parshas Kedoshim. Okay. You haven't been working with it's really an important resource. But if you want to know some out of the way Midrash, I already told you. I guess now you can Google. Right. Do you find yourself? Let's say someone told you, I want you to figure out the deeper meaning. Of it's called Medrash Teiman, that Haman used the wood of the Beis HaMikdash to create the gallows to hang Mordechai. How would you try to find such information?
I would Google the information, look for the source, book up, read the source.
Okay, what would you do the cookbook?
Probably write.
Haman would from Beis Hamikdash. Try it now.
Chabad.org, the high priest chamber. You know, this is just talking about the Inbit Amikdash where. So I'd probably write Haman's gallows or something.
Okay.
There's some website talking safe popped up, but it says 10 things you never knew about Haman. So I would like sift through this. There's a.
So you know, this is my title on the internet.
Yeah.
Just get yourself a Torah Shlema. Well, Torah Shlema, you don't know where to look there. Right? So there, on something like this, get yourself Legends of the Jews. I've mentioned that. I brought it in once. Legends of the Jews by Louis Ginsberg. G-I-N-Z-B-E-R-G. Legends of the Jews. There is a comprehensive index. And if you looked under Haman, you'll see 200 entries. And go under side entry, gallows, and you'll find it. Okay. Actually, two midrashim. One that he used the wood from the Beis Hamikdash in general, one that he used the wood from the Kodesh Kodashim. I want you to know what to use to look up when something comes up in your head and say, where am I going to find that? Hey, you can call me and I'll help you, but Legends of the Jews. Now, Torah Shlema also has an index. But the index is you have to know your psukim. There was no Torah Shlema on Esther. If there was, you'd find it. I must confess, I sometimes just in my book, my sefer, which is called Parsha Shlema, I didn't name it that. I was afraid to name it that, but they Mosaica, they wanted to name it that because it covers 10 different parts of the Parsha. So it called Parsha Shlema, and sometimes I write a footnote. A lot more about this topic can be found on Torah Shlema if it is possible. Sort of cheating, but okay. I gave you everything you need to know about the Ov Vid Oni that'll help us figure out whether Shaul was a justified suicide or not. Again, I say, as soon as you come up to the explanation of whether it's a justified suicide, tell me. Okay? So, Vatomer Isha, the first thing any necromancer wants to know from her paying customer is. Yeah? Gina, tell us.
Do you want me to bring
up?
Mm-hmm.
YouTube, sir. Okay, the first thing you gotta know is who do you want to call back? Right. Now, we assume. Have any of you ever gone to a tarot card reader? I don't think so. Right? But if you did, it's an obvious sign that you think she's got something to tell you. Notice I said she. You're almost always me. Right? But have you seen them in tarot card shops? Usually in the basement, you gotta go down a little bit, and there's like, it's like $5 for the first question. And then, right? So he goes quickly and says, Shmuel. Now, if someone went to a tarot card reader today, and she asks the first question, Shabbos, or the necromancer, who would you ask to see? And maybe you're too young, but someone who never just lost his wife, you know. You know what I'm saying? Maybe Chas V'Shalom, someone who was a dear friend. Maybe you want to find out, hey, what's going on over there? Right? So if you went to a tarot card and said, who would you like me to bring up for you? And you'd say, no, bring up Abraham Lincoln. And they'd say, what are you talking about? you know, this, she doesn't know who this is. He came in and he's by Chabes. He doesn't want anybody to know who he is. Right? He's still worried about optics. Right? So, he says, bring up Shmuel. He just says by the name Shmuel. So she can already sense. Obviously, if you're going to be a good necromancer, because the two directions you have to come into the story. Is she real or is she fake? Now, if you're the Rambam, there's no question here. Because all necromancers are fake. There's no such thing. So why does the Torah have a death penalty for doing something that's fake? Because people think it's real. And you're driving people away from their you know, making them afraid of things that aren't real. All of magic is fake, according to the Rambam. You're familiar with that sheet, right? Everybody? Okay. By the way, just parenthetically, the Rambam knows that a kamiya, an amulet, is bogus. It's nonsense. Right? Someone had, chas v'shalom, someone had pancreatic cancer and held this in their pocket for 1 month without dropping and letting go of it, and they were cured. So someone else thinks, I have it also, I have the same thing, I'm going to hold this too. It's known as a kamiya baduk, if it helps two people. Okay. The Rambam writes in Mor Nebuchim, a kamiya baduk is nonsense. There's no such thing. And Rashi lived in a world where kamiyas were very big. Rashi writes, you know what he says is the most common kamiya thing that you hold in your hand for good mazel? A rabbit's foot! You ever hear of that? You never heard of rabbit's foot? Very common in the Christian world. You never heard of someone holding a rabbit's foot at the end of a chain? I don't know. Google it. I mean, rabbit's feet is like a very famous, but Rashi writes about it in the sixth parak in the Sefer Shabbos. Fox's teeth to help insomnia. Rashi lived in a world where amulets and kamiyas were very commonly held. The Rambam allows one to carry an amulet on Shabbos in Rosh Hashanah. D'oraisa. Wait a second, shouldn't the Rambam just tell people don't carry it? It's nonsense. It's bogus. It's not helping people. The Rambam was aware that frame of mind was very helpful in curing people, very sick people. And if the person thinks this will help me because he thinks it helps someone else, then that frame of mind itself is helpful. Okay? Did Shaul think he was going to someone who had real advice for him? The answer is, of course. Anyone who goes to it, you're not going for nothing. You must have paid good money for this. Okay? Question for the reader is, do we think it's real or not? When she sees him wanting to call up Shmuel from the dead, she can tell this is unusual. Who calls Shmuel? People come to me and call their grandmother, they call their departed, they call a child that passed away. No one calls to speak to Shmuel, and I'm afraid to try to bring up Shmuel. Immediately, Rina continued reading, she saw Shmuel.
ותראה אישה את שמואל ותישא בקול גדול ותאמר האישה אל שאול לאמור לאמר מנתניה בארצה שאול.
Okay. By bringing up Shmuel, and Shmuel actually shows up. Notice the pasuk doesn't say, and she tried to bring up Shmuel. What impression might you get from that? It was Shmuel. She felt Shmuel. To the point that she realized this. How did seeing Shmuel convince her that this is Shaul? Maybe it was Shmuel's cousin. Can you feel that something is happening in this pasuk that she experienced for the first time? What might that be?
wasn't fake this time.
Right, an actual necromancy. Is this really Shmuel or not? And before Shmuel are divided on this, so he tells her, Shmuel responds, Pasuk Gimel, please.
ויאמר לה המלך, אל תראי, כי מה ראיתי? מה ראית? ותאמר האישה, אל שאול, אלוהים ראיתי, עולים מן הארץ.
You should probably read that Elohim.
Elohim.
Huh? If you read Elohim, then you're implying that it's something godly. Something divine looking, but Elohim, like Ad Elohim, Yavod Vashneihem in Parshas Mishpatim. I look at something, Rashi says like Malachim. Okay. Rashi says that Moshe came up with him. So she said, I saw someone looking divine. Okay. He asked her what he looks like. She said so. Now, she probably never saw Shmuel. She also saw him all the time. So he wanted to say, you know, just give me a picture of what he looks like. So this is he didn't see this. She did. Okay. And now Shmuel opens his mouth and tells Shaul what's going to happen. Okay. Read one more. Vayomer Shmuel Shaul.
Vayomer Shmuel Shaul. Lama Pergas Tani Lahalot Oti. Vayomer Shaul. Tzarli Mo'od Mufishtim Hilchamim.
Alright, so listen, I've tried everything. I've appealed to God. Notice he left one of the things out. He didn't mention the word Metumim. Maybe he was too embarrassed to mention that because Shmuel would snap back and, of course you don't have Urim Tumim, you killed them all. So he was like ashamed to say that, you know, that part. Okay, so he left out, before I should point that, it's a Maimon Chazal, that he purposely left out. Look, see Rashi, Aval bo Urim Tumim lo amar lo. Afabisha sha'al lahem, kimo sha'amur lamala, sha'ya bo shmimenu al shaharag no vira kohanim. Okay, see it? Ashamed to mention the word. It's close reading of Rashi. But I'm in a lot of tsar. Tsar li mavo, David is going to use the exact same words in Shmuel Bet. Let me say fitachanun. I need some advice. What should I do? Okay. So Shmuel is going to lash out at him. Meira, please. Ted Zion, Shmuel's going to lash out at him and not really give him much to go by. All that effort. Go ahead, Bema Shmuel.
Bema Shmuel, V'lam l'tishalini v'ashem sar v'ilecha v'yi aracha v'yaz Hashem lo kasher diber v'yadai v'yikra Hashem et hamam l'cha v'yadecha v'yitamna l'racha l'david.
Why are you asking me? Orecha is an enemy. Orecha. God has become your enemy. Targum, Baal Debave is an enemy. God is about to do to you what I've been saying. He has torn the malucha. Remember when he said that when he ripped his garment after Amalek, right? Remember that? God has torn your malucha from you. Now, this is the third time that Shmuel has told something like this to Shaul. First time was when he didn't wait 7 days for him, and he made it seem like, I'm going to win the war, not you. No, in Israel, we win the war with prophets, not with kings. So he said, God has torn your kingdom from you. After he sinned with Amalek, and Shaul kept on assuring that he did the right thing, he did it right over and over and over. So he says, God has torn your kingdom and has given it to someone better than you. Now the third time, he puts the cherry on the top. See what he does? ויצנו לרעך דוד. Yes, you see, Shmuel is not afraid. Remember, he was afraid that Shaul would kill him if he crowned David king. Obviously, you can't kill a dead man. Okay. Shana, would you like to please continue? Kasher lo shamata b'kol Hashem.
Kasher lo shamata b'kol Hashem,
b'lo asitah
chayonakob amalik, okim debar hazah, asalakha Hashem hayon lezah. ויתן השם גם את ישראל עמך ביד פלישתים ומחר אתה ובניך הנה גם את מחנה ישראל ייתן השם ביד פלישתים.
Your machane is going to fall, your kingdom is going to fall. Tomorrow you and your sons are with me. Because you didn't listen. Okay. Okay, now, is she bogus or is she real? There may be a simple question here. She's real, but it's not her. You get it? The Rambam could still be right that a human being does not have the power to revive a dead person to get information from them. And if they do claim to be doing so, they're fabricating. You with me? This is the first time in her life she actually did bring someone from the dead, but it wasn't her. That's what made her scream. This was an unusual thing for her. Okay? Is this plausible to you? If it's totally bogus, and that there was someone under the table saying, right? Make everyone very tired, put on lights, a few candles in a very dark room. And there may be some wind blowing from some place, or there may be some, you know, someone plays some playing music, soft music, and boom. And they get you in the mood for like they hypnotize you. Maybe he was hypnotized into thinking this. However you will understand this, you have to contend with the fact that what we just heard from Shmuel is exactly what happened. Let's read the three Perushim that are on the top of this page in what I just gave you. The first, two are from the Gaonim, Rav Shmuel Bar Chofni Gaon. Can you see Rav Shmuel Bar Chofni Gaon, everybody?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, Rina, continue with that. If you Kulam nishtavu ki ma'asei ha'ov. Go ahead.
Kulam nishtavu ki ma'asei ha'ov ha'va b'tavu b'baram ben zavim
ha'tavu. No, those are words that Eliyahu uses. It means it's all nonsense and bogus. Is Kulam nishtavu, really? Well, maybe at the time of Shmuel Bar Chofni, it's 9th, 10th century. But there are plenty of Mepharshim that say that what she did was real. Like Rashi. All right, but he's just saying in his circles, the people he knows, everybody agrees that there's nothing to it. The Torah only pronounces the death penalty because people think it's real. Continue.
אבל יש מהם אומרים כי לא דיבר שמול עם שאול, חס ושלום לא עלה שמול בגרל, ולא דיבר, אבל האישה עשתה הכל בנביא. מיד הכירה כי שאול הוא, ואחר ראו לו כי מצא החכמה הכירה עם הצד דיבר זה, על המה. מה ראיתני ואתה שאול?
She knew it was Shaul right away. It's just that she, you know, she's very perceptive, and she just went along with it. Remember, she wants her payment, right? And she also doesn't want to get killed for what she's doing, right? The derech balat ov.
Derech balat ov le'avi adam shemina bermitov
Machbu'o. It's from his from a hidden place. He's talking to him. Oh.
Bekasher Bosho Lidrosh Mata.
Mita.
Mita Verata Oto. The Baho. The Yada Ki Pumachar Yayot Sail of Akama. The Holy Israel Hayubaka Gajol. Veda Ma She Asashabu. Sherad Kwane Hashem. Shema Fi Hamakid Had Tvarim and Amarim of Russia.
I'm not convinced about this. What do you think? He's obviously dealing with the problem I just mentioned a few minutes ago. How could she have gotten it so dead right if it was all bogus? There's someone under the table? How could she have the chutzpah to tell the king of Israel, tomorrow you're going to die with your sons? Unless it was something that was more than certain. I mean, what if you get that wrong? All right, but he says, okay, stop, everybody knew it. Masha Amar Vayom Shmuel Shaul. I think he is so bought into this problematic shita that he just goes overboard. I don't accept these last few points. You hear what he's saying? In other words, how could she be so right if it was just a guy under the table saying, "Oh, tomorrow, you want to be right?" And what about the fact that it says "Vayomer Shmuel El Shaul"? It's not the way of the Bible to write something like "Vayomer Ha'ish Hayotachas Hashulchan El." He thought it was Shmuel, so it's going to say "Vayomer Shmuel." Right? The Bible does that a lot. Right? It's telling from the standpoint of the person in the narrative. Right? Okay. Shmuel thought it was the Baal HaTov talking, so Shmuel. Shaul thought it was Shmuel talking, so it says, "V'yomer Shmuel al Shaul." Right? Mistama, Shmuel Bar Chochmi would agree with the Rambam about all forms of magic. Right? It says, "Nishtavu kol, kulam nishtavu." Everybody agrees. Okay, let's read Rav Sadia Gaon, about the year up in the second one, the middle of the page. Let's see. He adds a slight different wrinkle. He's like Shmuel Bar Chochmi in some way, but he's different in another way. Emes.
Emet ki rachok hu shetada heija ha'atido l'chein shetichya hi et hamet b'chokma ha'ol hach ha'ich yifarech ha'chaya et Shmuel k'dil l'sakter l'shaul et kol ha'koru עתידות לבוא אליו. וכי האישה לא ידע בכל אילה בנפלה כמו שנאמר, ותזעק בקול גדול. ואשר אמרה האישה, את מי אעלה לך? דברי התורים הם, כי דעתה היה לעשות כמנהגה.
Okay. So, if Sadigon agrees that she doesn't have the power to do this, but he has a different solution for how she could have get it so right. The answer is she wasn't her, it was God. Was Shmuel brought back from the dead? Yes. Did she do it? No. Why not? Because no human being has the power to bring back the dead. This is, I think, the simpler answer. He is like Shmuel Bar Chochmi in his agreement that this doesn't exist, but he allows for the more likely perush of that she got everything right because it was really Shmuel, only it was God doing it. Why didn't Shmuel Bar Chochmi come up with this? Isn't that obvious? What does Shmuel Bar Chochmi want to avoid? Says, listen, if a necromancer can't bring back Shmuel from the dead, God's not going to either. God does not do that. Just because a shlubby woman wants it to be done, I'm sorry, God's not going to do that. Right? If it says Shmuel came back from the dead, it must be hard, bogus. I'm not saying I agree with this, but I can't picture why would Shmuel Bar Chochmi, insist on such a position. As far as the suicide is concerned, is it important for us to consider whether or not she actually did bring Shmuel back from the dead? What's the important point? What did Shaul think? We already know from the beginning of today's class what Shaul thinks. You don't go to a tarot card reader just for curiosity. You go because you want to know, should I date this guy or should I date that guy? Is there something in the cards that tells me? Should I take that job or should I take this job? The Torah is very much against this kind of moral philosophy. Don't use irrational things. That's called nichush. Don't do it. Right? But wouldn't you agree that if you do go to a necromancer, it's not just out of curiosity, it's because you want something, you want to get an answer about something. Okay? Shaul thinks that what he heard is true. Let's just do Ravag and then we'll circle around to the Radak about the suicide. Yes?
Just a quick question. So, If Shaul didn't hear this, or like because Shaul heard this prophecy, do you think maybe it was like a self-fulfilling prophecy, or like if it wasn't, like if he hadn't heard about this, that he wouldn't have necessarily like killed himself?
I think that's a very extremely insightful statement. I think it's really what's going on in the dark. In other words, Shaul, yes, you've done some two terrible things, and the prophet told you, what's going to happen. But this going to the Baalat Ov just cements everything else you did. You might have had a different ending, and Divrei Yavin makes the point of that. Because it makes him look worse. It says, lo darash v'ashem. What are you talking about? He did inquire of God. He tried with Chalomos, Nevi'im, Urim. Nothing worked. So don't distort history and say they didn't do anything. Get that answer? Let's see if the Ravag is what innovation the Ravag suggests here. Mira, would you like to take us through Ravag here? Did you just read Sadigon?
I did.
Yeah, okay, I'm sorry. Shana, would you like to read your book?
Sure. Alderecha amat lo ho Allah min manu, lo higia min manu kibor le sha'ol.
Okay, you see where he's going with this. He sounds a little like Shmuel Bar Chochmi here. He says, there's nothing here, nothing helped us. He didn't hear anything. Yeah.
Aval haya lo kulo pa'al mif olot hadinyon. Kishal haya lo koach ma nivu e ka amru hagam she'ol b'nevi'im v'hine im hit ororot demyonel mizat hapkol umma she hit
itamit
lo mi shmuel b'chayav shenit ba'er lo meham shasham Itvarach kara haman locha mi menu benitna la David kumosha mar shaol la David yadati kimelach timloch ונתבער לו בחוש היוד.
הישם יתברך.
הישם יתברך. עם דוד והיותו שר ממנו הגיע מזאת הפעולה כל אלה הדברים הנזכרים.
Oh my goodness, this is vintage rock bargain. It is so brilliant. It says he gets the best of all worlds. What did we read here? What is all that? This Ralbag surely knew because he was such an expert of the mind. His perush is just so underutilized. Now we have his perush to the Torah. It should be, have any of you ever even opened up a Ralbag on the Torah? He's in a Mikros Gedolos, so sometimes. But the Ralbag on the Torah is 5 volumes, Mosan Rav Kook. I had an original Ralbag, it was handwritten. In handwriting, printed handwriting. Ad Kedekach, that no one was using it. Now Mosan Rav Kook has put it into typeset, and it's brilliant. Plus he does all the midos and all the deos that we learn from the various stories after a number of chapters. To wit, look what Ralbag looks like in the beginning of Shmuel Aleph Perek Ches. You see these long Ralbags? See what they are. It's this collection of all the lessons we learned, the 472 lessons we learned from the first 7 books. Ralbag was a mind expert. He's just so underutilized. Please use him more in your Torah studies. I mean, by Torah studies, I mean Chamisha Chumshei Torah. Okay, his work on the Torah has just now become available to us. He says that everything we read about what Shmuel said was hypnotized into Shaul's mind. That was possible. Have you ever been hypnotized? And they say if you really don't want to be hypnotized, you can stop. But if you want to be hypnotized, just go. Okay. I've seen it. You see, an incredible power to make you feel cold, to make you feel hot. To make... Once I had a mentalist came to Camp Besorah when we came up first with the staff, and my daughter came up with us. She was maybe young. And she was among those who agreed to be hypnotized. And one thing he said, was imagine that there is a very cute, furry cat sitting on your lap. My daughter hates cats. And she was definitely hypnotized because what she did was she pushed it off. So I did this, I asked her, were you faking that? Were you like making it? No, I was just really, I thought there was a cat on me and I wanted to push it off. So they have such power of suggestion. The Balat Ov could not raise the dead, but she was very good at hypnotizing people. Especially when someone comes in with dark candles and he wants information. She convinced him that he was speaking to Shmuel. He gave the umdana. That's better than Shmuel ben Chofni. Don't you see that everything that is said to him is the realization of all his greatest fears? Shmuel ben Chofni had to convince us that, well, Mistamishinu this. And then she goes out on the limb to say, tomorrow you're going to die? You know why Shaul was a justified suicide? Because the last thing that Shmuel told him, whether or not it was actually Shmuel, was tomorrow you're with me. And that's not at a chess tournament. That's on the other side of existence. Right? Shaul knew that death was certain This is what Sadi Gaon is telling us. Only Shaul knew that death was certain. The rest of us, we'll give up hope on Rachamim. Okay. So some of this supplementary material here is on what is a Balak Oath and what is a reputation. What matters is that someone like Shaul at this time should have known better, but he is not himself. And he felt that whatever he heard that day is the truth. Which explains how Chazal might have looked upon his suicide. Okay, that's all we will do on Balak Oath. Okay, I would like, it says here the next thing we're doing is the Aron Hashem, the return of Yaron. That's a lot of skippage. I want to discuss the next class together. I want to discuss the actual suicide of Shaul and whether the guy who records it and describes it in the beginning of Shmuel Bet is telling the truth or not. Or whether David told him telling the truth. Okay? Right. I'm not asking you to prepare that. There are a lot of things to do, but that's what we're going to do next class, okay? We're going to look at the beginning of Shmuel Bet and see if the beginning of Shmuel Bet does capture the essence of what actually happened at the end of Shmuel Bet. Okay?
Yeah.
What happens to...